I'm going to spend a couple minutes telling you about the history in Baltimore. Our funding, Lori, is through the IPP program. And the IPP, the Infertility Prevention Program, which is funded by CDC in the 10 public health regions in the United States, began early in Baltimore. We were one of the first ones after Seattle and Region 10 to come on board. And so you can see we had just screened a small group of people in 1994 at the insistence of the medical director of our school-based clinics, who was Dr. John Santelli. I don't know if he's here this year at the meeting, but he's been a pioneer in STDs in adolescents. And he said, if you're going to screen STD clinics and you're going to screen family planning clinics, you must screen the adolescents in our school-based health clinics. So we said, okay. But anyway, we've moved along with limited IPP funding over the years, and you can see that we always have a pretty high prevalence. I think in 2006, we had a very big push by the nurses to rescreen. So this is raw data, but if you look at unduplicated females, which we have recently looked at, this is just once during the year, you can see that our prevalences are very high. We've been able to mine this database to do reinfection and looking between the years 96 and 2003 at unduplicated students, we found that 26% of them are getting reinfected. So we need to do more. We think we're doing something, but we always need to do more to prevent these reinfections. So I just wanted to mention that as you accumulate data, then you do have a chance to look at reinfection. And my last slide about Baltimore is I want to make a pitch for self-collected vaginal samples. We convinced our nurses last year to switch from urine. I think all the school-based clinics and all of the school screening programs throughout the United States are using urine. And urine's great, but there are better samples if we can move in that direction in the future. We just did a small study when we were switching from urine to vaginal swabs last year. And you can see, this is done with the Aptima Combo 2, that during the fall, we collected 364 samples, and you can see that we picked up 12 additional positives with the vaginal swab that the urines missed. And our nurses said, oh, girls will never collect vaginal swabs. Well, we've been having women collect vaginal swabs for 15 years, and even in developing countries, in Uganda, women don't have bathrooms. They'll go behind their hut and collect the self-administered vaginal swabs. And upon questioning the students, they like it, because when they carry that urine down the hall to the school-based clinic, everyone knows where they've been, but the small tube that the swab goes in is very easy and discreet. So now I'm going to switch to my other hat, take a step back like Lenore did, and we're going to talk about all of the programs and screening protocols in education. Currently, we are only in Baltimore, as I mentioned, in 8 high schools now and 3 middle schools, and they are allowed to be screened without parental permission or consent if they admit to being sexually active and they don't opt out of screening. Education is on a one-to-one, personalized, on an individual patient basis. And now, if we are trying to, we've been trying to move for several years, there's always elections, new school board members, always a reason why we've not been allowed to expand to the whole school. So in order to do this, of course, you need the buy-in from these many people that Lenore mentioned, and we haven't gotten that yet. We test by Aptima Combo 2, and last year our prevalence was females 15% and 9 in males. Partner notification is done by the health staff in the school-based clinics. If they're a student in the school, they call them down and they're told that they have been a contact of another person. And if their sexual partner is outside of the school, the patient is asked to notify their partner. In New York City, now they're offering screening and education to these public high school students aged 9 to 12, and they target their target schools are in neighborhoods with the highest STD rates, and I assume as they move forward in the development of the program that they'll move outside. So the STD staff go to the schools to conduct the programs. Now, in New York City, education is within a 45-minute class period. And so the class is conducted with an educational emphasis first. They have a 25-minute presentation, which is focused on STD prevention. In the beginning, they use the staff. Now I think they might be expanding to maybe use other staff. Correct me if I'm wrong, but still using the STD program staff. Okay. And then they are told about the availability of sexual and reproductive health services. Everyone participates in the school in the educational program, but it's voluntary, so they can opt out and they're assured that it's confidential. So in New York, it's similar to Philly. They get a brown paper bag with a urine cup and a contact sheet and a callback card. All the students complete the paperwork just like they were participating, and they get their instructions for how to get the test results. All students are brought to the restrooms. This is a very similar approach to we've used with the military, with screening military recruits. Everyone goes, but not everyone urinates. So they can choose whether or not they want to fill the cup in the brown paper bag, and they bring their brown paper bag either back to the station with or without a urine sample. So no one knows if you go to the restroom that you're collecting the urine, therefore you must be sexually active. Confidentiality and privacy issues in doing large-scale screening are very important, and IRBs are very reluctant to allow you to single out people who may then have some embarrassment later. So if you say you're screening everyone, and then if you don't want to be screened, you just don't stand up. Anyway, in New York, they're given the number, they give their secret code. No one gets their results but them. They use probe-tech testing. And about 50% of the students decide to be tested. So their prevalence is about 10 in females and about 5 in males for last year. Now, the Indian Health Service, as you just heard Laurie speak, is very individualized and it's very hard to generalize. So they have site-specific educational protocols at every site that they're working their way into. And I think I must say that this area for the screening in the Indian Health Country or Indian Health Services has to be one of the most challenging that anyone in the country has faced or will ever face because of the particular geographic regions that they have to cover, and then having to deal, we just have to deal with educators and school officials, commissioners. They also have to deal with the tribal health people. So everything is site-specific, every project is individual, and everything is case-by-case. So she's mentioned that they're working with about 4 sites, and some have done, a few have done the screening, and they're hoping to start screening in the others. So, mention every site-specific protocol. Some of the sites that they're screening at are using NATS, some aren't. Some are using Beckman Dickinson, and some are using GenProbe. So it's not generalizable to say what kind of test. The important thing is to get a test done for chlamydia. So their positivity has varied from 3 to 7, and I guess in one school it's much higher than that. Where they did screen, 73% of the students provided a urine sample, so that was good. Philly, who's offered the screening? You've heard the history of the program. All 9th to 12th graders in Philadelphia Public Schools are offered both the educational program and the screening program. And they do have some exceptions, special education students and schools that are operated by the prison system. Although they might be a good place to expand into next. We know that detention has very high rates. So the trained staff from the Philadelphia Public Health Center go to each of the schools and they present the educational program to about 60 students, which is maybe 2 classrooms, I don't know, in a typical 45-minute class period. They usually initially started with a PowerPoint presentation, but last year, or 2006, they developed a video, which I think was very innovative. Would be nice to be able to put this video out on the internet, Lenore, and let the students log into it on YouTube or something, or Facebook. But anyway, so this they have this they have popular radio personalities as speakers doing this video. So I think this is a great innovation. So the education covers a lot of STDs, but it focuses on why you should get tested and how you should protect yourself. So, and then they also offer information if you don't want to participate in the school-based screening, that you can go to other services. So again, similar to New York, all students go to the restroom with their little brown bag. They either return the urine or they return the empty cup. And then right there on site in the school, the public health department staff aliquot the urine. I guess you throw away the empty urine cups, so you don't have to carry them all back, or maybe you reuse them, I don't know. But anyway, they are testing with Aptima Combo 2, and the prevalence last year was 7.2 for females and 2.8 for males. And this is, has come down over the years that you all have been screening. And, interestingly enough, if you look at Philadelphia-wide data, the prevalence in or at least the case numbers in Philadelphia, a whole city, have come down. This has been a very innovative and effective project. They are given a number to ask for Zelda when they call back to get the results. Now, let's move on to New Orleans. The you've heard the little history of the program. They use their administration contacts in the schools to seek interest in seeing whether or not the schools would participate. Their initial concept always starts with the school officials who are most receptive. So you want to catch the low-hanging fruit. If someone wants to invite you in, then that's where you go, I guess. The most influential person they found in the schools is the school nurse. And when they work with a school-based health center, they work with the director of that health center. So this contact always leads to kind of a tripartite meeting between the screening program administration, the school principal, and the school nurse, and or the director of the school-based health care. So what happens is that the screening program representative gives a detailed description of the program, discusses the details, and how students will be notified, and you know, describes in detail the minute workings of the collection and the screening protocol. And what happens is they get a time and a date then that's scheduled for students to receive the oral presentation of the education program. And it's arranged to what fits in each school best. It could either be given in like a class, a health class, or an English class, or homeroom class, or through assemblies. And I guess this is dependent upon the individual school. You always have to work within the system and be flexible enough to not demand how you want to do it, but do it the way they want you to do it. So consent forms are given to all these students, and those who are 18 years older or older have signed the consent form, which I don't imagine there are many high school students that are older than 18. So the younger ones take their consent forms home. I think this is maybe only one of the only program that's actually getting signed consent from parents. And frankly, I'm surprised in the South that they're able to get these signed. But anyway, the consent forms are brought back, and the screening program assigns the days to get the consent forms, hand out more forms, because a lot of them get lost in backpacks, I imagine, and then give more forms to the ones that probably didn't get them the first time. So they schedule a screening date that's agreeable with the school. Then they locate each individual school an appropriate place for screening, whether or not they have accessibility to a restroom or whatever. And then when they screen, the SCAP classes are brought to the testing area, and they each student gets receives individually a discussion on their participation. It sounds like it's very time-consuming and hard to do. Those who don't have consent and those who have consent but are not willing go back to their classrooms. I don't know whether this would stigmatize some people to say, oh, if they're staying, they're sexually active, and if the other ones go back. But I think it's probably not that clear, and so maybe that doesn't happen. So anyway, the students collect a urine specimen. They're testing by strand displacement, and the prevalence for their last screening, which was probably before Hurricane Katrina, Katrina was 15% in females and 9%, and they screened about 2,000 people. So in summary, schools provide an excellent venue for education opportunities for teaching adolescents, but it's not easy. Screening for adolescents in schools is feasible. You get a huge access to a large number of at-risk, highly at-risk individuals, and you can use non-invasive samples that don't require a clinician. None of this would have been possible before the advent of NAT tests. So prevalence is usually higher. I mentioned the CDC age-based charts. Adolescents always have the highest rates of STDs, at least for chlamydia. And it's a great location to get students treated because they're there. And so you don't, like in some STD clinics, 30% of patients don't come back, or maybe 30% do come back. So you can test a lot, but often you don't get them treated. So for those of you who are interested in school-based training, screening opportunities abound if you have the political will and the funding. So I'd like to thank in the Baltimore site all of our crew that does the screening, and also our two nurse practitioners, Sharon Hobson and Jerry Waterfield.